Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, May 27, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Well, Melody.
Well, we had gold climb back from its low on the day. We're currently looking at the New York spot price for gold. Basically unchanged at 1188.70. We have silver down 7 cents at 1676. Platinum is down 5 at 1123, along with palladium up 2 at $785. So gold 1188, silver 1676, platinum 1123, and palladium up 2 at 785. USDX today down 0.02 at 97.29. Crude oil today was down 0.42 at 57.61. And the paper markets today, the stock markets today, of course, had a nice little reversal from yesterday, up 121 points, 18,162. You have the NASDAQ up 73 at 51.06, along with the S&P up 19 at 21.23. 10-year yield, 2.14%. Euro, 109. That's up. Usually when the dollar is down, well, euro is up 0.26 at 109. The Asian markets were mixed. Both London and Germany were up about 1.25% overnight. And that's about it in the markets today. Al, we have Wendy Wilson joining us from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. Is Al with you?
Yes, he is.
Yes, I am.
Hey, Al.
How you doing?
Hey. Oh, I'm doing well. I hope everybody had a great Memorial Day. It was excellent over here.
Well, that's good. I understand you want to talk about futuristic technology.
Oh, I know. We've been talking about this for, you know, a while now, but everywhere we turn, there seems to be some new technology that attempts to either enhance or even replace activities that humans do. So there seems to be this new generation of technology afoot that won't only provide efficiency, but also seems to prevent a challenge because gadget freaks like their gizmos to challenge them. Once they master them, then it's obsolete. But there's some things in many markets that I want to cover real quick. But companies with deep pockets are encouraging forward thinking way outside the box. So creativity in science and technology is the you know, the future. So the technology future is about really weirdness, to be honest, and pushing the limits past normal. So according to the technology sector.
You know where the limit of normal is?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, all by itself, that's interesting.
Yeah, well, whatever normal is.
I used to think I knew what normal was, but
go ahead. Well, according to the technology sector, the goal of the microchip is to become the zero chip, which really translates into more data on smaller chips, you know, tiny brains, which think big. According to the futuristic expert Brian Johnson, the goal is to make the computer chip so small it could be housed on anything, even a contact lens. So the technology already exists, and they're using what they call invisible atom-powered transistors to replace the chips. And also, we'll get into what quantum science is doing with that in a minute. But this is really interesting. The neuroscience area is cashing in, too. They are developing machines that will be able to read our minds. These are machines that decode the electrical brainwaves we all put out, and they're hoping to be able to read your mind, my mind, Melanie's mind, is simply as turning in like a radio station. So, of course, they're saying that this is being developed to help people that don't have a voice, like stroke patients, the dementia patients.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's all being done to help us. They're always here to help us. We're going to help the stroke patients.
Yeah.
And by the way, and while we're helping them, we're going to be able to monitor every ID you've got in your head.
Right. Well, their dirty little petticoat is showing now, because the researchers at the University of California say they're getting closer to this reality of reading your mind. They actually have given it a name. They call it neurohacking. So hijacking someone's thoughts without their knowledge is their goal. But it gets really worse. They want to take these machines and eventually evolve them to be able to manipulate the thoughts of people.
Of course.
Yep. They want to be able to have the ultimate, get this, in advertising and marketing. So they want to affect the wants and desires of people, and they call that neuromarketing. But this could have some deadly consequences, because think about it. If you influence somebody, let's say, that has an allergy to peanuts, to convince them they want to eat this product that has peanuts, you know what I mean?
The whole thing is, you almost wonder how people can be so stupid and so greedy as to devise this stuff. I know it's just a natural progression of one thing leads to another. Mm-hmm. You know, you could trace it all the way back to the wheel. Somebody's back there saying, I'm telling you, this is going to end badly when they develop the first wheel. Watch out, there's going to be big trouble. We're just now beginning to get to the real trouble, but
I know. Well, as the wheels are turning upstairs, they're having access to data, really, though, is the power. It's the new currency. So that when they have the access to human preferences, habits, and relationships, they're able to optimize that, and it's called optimized commodities. And they're able to hone in and target certain things when they know enough about you. So their technology basically is on its path to replacing independent decision-making, which means whoever controls the data controls everything else. Right?
And who controls the guy or girl who controls the data?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I mean,
it'll be
the
like
question. Who's controlling them?
Well,
and, you know, the whole thing just becomes too weird. But what I want to know,
right.
If I were married right now, would my spouse be able to get one of these things and read my mind?
I don't know.
I'm thinking that might adversely affect my marriage. You know, you understand? If a spouse really knew what you were thinking, I'm
Uh-oh.
Not sure.
Like in homicide.
Yeah, I understand. It's one of those things.
Well, let's talk about the quantum leap area of quantum physics. They're cashing in into this area, too. Actually, I'm still trying to wrap my brain around the Google car that drives itself. But now they're saying they have computers so complex that they don't require wires or circuits, just energy generated by light and sound. So this is the field of quantum electromagnetics, and it's called QED, which harnesses the interaction between matter and light. So the physicist will use sound-activated phonons generate quantum vibrations, and that motors the computer, the machine. So the physicist at MIT, are using the Zero chips in the quantum technology. And get this, they could develop an invisible computer that's activated just by you thinking about it.
See, the problem you get with this, I mean, the government spies on our phone calls. They at least collect metadata. Everybody understands that. They want to preserve the right to collect metadata. They're probably spying on this conversation right now if they care to. The problem is there is so much data that there's too much for anyone to comprehend or do anything with. If they know what I'm thinking and you're thinking and Melody's thinking and everybody in the audience is thinking, they're going to have so much data. What will they do with it all? Who's going to comprehend all this stuff and be able to apply it in a way that's meaningful or even dangerous? It gets
just
weird.
That's why they need the robots with, developing intellect, let's talk about that. You know what an avatar is, right, Al?
I think so.
Okay, avatars, for those out there that don't know, are computer game entities. They're make-believe in a world on the computer systems. But DARPA has budgeted millions of dollars to make avatar robots a reality. These physical avatars will take active roles, and they say in real life, and in some instances, get this, replace the human counterpart. So it kind of reminds me.
What do we do with the human counterpart?
Well,
we're going to create this robot, and it's going to duplicate some of your job. Wash the dishes, wash the car, the rest of it. That's good. All right, but eventually the robot's going to move in and say, we don't need you anymore, Al or Melody or Wendy. We don't need you anymore. Where do you go?
I know. Well, this kind of reminds me of the movie The Stepford Wives,
I understand.
But the medical industry and the military are embracing this. They're suggesting that people have the option to live life with, quote, get this, a second life surrogate, an avatar. I'm not sure if that means replacing a deceased loved one with a robot. I don't know. It's just creepy. It's just creepy to me.
Will we be able to create an avatar for my favorite dog back when I was a kid?
I have no idea.
Can I resurrect that dog and bring him back to?
I know the taxidermist may be on the way out. What do you think?
I don't know.
Well, let's talk about nanotechnology real quick. We're running out of time. Nanotechnology, medical science loves this area because of its precision. There's 25.4 million nanos per square inch, according to the National Nanotechnology Initiative. So medical science will use this technology to copy nature at its basic cellular level, attempting to either replicate or recreate it. So genetic codes are based in nanotechnology. So we're going to see more nano tools in the future as science blends nature with technology. And then there's the new skin. There's this groundbreaking advancement in electronics made into a thin layer of stretchable material similar to skin. The product can bend and be stretched around anything. Researchers are suggesting they're making a lot of progress in this area. Even the synthetic electronic skin can, if it's damaged, can repair itself. So huge implications, obviously, in wearable technology, including clothing with your tracking chips in it. So stretchable electronics have lots of applications, according to Purdue University engineers. They report this material can stretch 500% in length, retain its conductive properties, and go back to its original shape. There you go. But I got a warning, and this comes from co-founder of Sun Microsystems, Bill Joy. He says the future won't need humans. He stresses the importance of evaluating the ethical ramifications of all this technology before it's integrated into society, he says.
How much money can you make off ethics? What's the profit percentage in ethics? You tell me that, and I'll believe that they're going to make ethical considerations are going to play a role in this.
Well, he did.
The only thing that's going to count is profit and loss. If you can make money doing it, it's going to be done.
Right. Well, the technological citizen would agree with you and says that the virtual reality of today is going to be the reality of tomorrow. They had some astonishing insights in their report. They said, what's ahead for mankind? According to them, there's a technology revolution underway involving nanotechnology, data hubs, robots, and artificial intelligence. And they said they expect to see a whole change in the social landscape of planet Earth over the next 2 decades, but it's going to be a gradual thing. So I think people are just
rising up and killing the technocrats. We want to just kind of ease the frogs. Oh, wait. Come on over here and have a bath.
Well,
and you frogs
you know,
are going to have a nice, long, warm bath for all the frogs.
Well, I just think people need to decide which side of the microchip they want to be on. Because we always should ask the question, whoever's, you know, we shouldn't just create just for creation's sake or for greed, but that's exactly what it seems to be happening. The question should be, does the technology threaten God's creation? If the answer is yes. If the answer is yes, then the decision is already made for us. We shouldn't create it. So there's going to be come a time when everyone is going to be asked, what did you do to uphold the will of God and what he created? And the only right answer is, all that I could.
Yeah, I get that. And but there was those who go along with the program. I mean, it's hard to look at this stuff and think that we are not in or near end times.
I know.
I mean, it really, you look at this, and a lot of there's some people don't believe in God, they don't believe in end times, or that sort of thing. You look at this is the sort of thing I've got another article we'll talk about later on in the program today, about trying to impose a cashless society whereby, and it's happening right now, they're working at it right now. We won't be able to buy or sell anything unless you have a card or a number or an account or whatever that's controlled by the government.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. You can't look at this and say, wait a second, didn't they say something about that in the Bible? Yes, they did. The Bible talked about this.
Right, right. Yeah, I think the Bible said it was the mark of the beast.
Yeah. You can get a mark on your hand or on your forehead, and if you don't have the mark, no one, you can't buy or sell.
Well, I mean, how many times has somebody asked you, what's your Social Security number? You already have it memorized. So it's already in your forehead.
Yeah, that's possible. That's
was the beginning of the conditioning, was that Social Security number, because you really can't buy or sell without that number.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's linked to everything.
So it is linked to everything, but that was the beginning, you know, the beginning of the acceptance of what is to come.
Well, I think
what
people
is planned
need
to come and try to resist it as best we can, but we'll watch and see. You know, if we are in end times, it's going to happen.
Well, I say people should
don't know that an absolute fact, and so it should be resisted.
Well, I think people should do all they can to be self-sufficient now. So I think if they would rather have, you know, synthetic electronic skin monitoring their blood pressure rather than, you know, healthy lifestyle and herbs to help them keep that under track, well, then go for it. But I personally would rather keep my organs that I was born with rather than, you know, have maybe a transplant or a robot part. Thank you very much. So there's herbs that will help strengthen the body, help you to keep all your body parts. And we have those herb products if you want to inquire at Apothecary Herbs. So they can give us a call. We'll send them a free product catalog at 866-229-3663. Thepowerherbs.com is the website, 866-229-3663. And we'll just keep on trucking.
Let me ask you one more question before you go.
Okay.
You said that they were working on these nano computers, or they were so small that they could fit in a contact lens. And you said they were atom powered. What do you mean by
atom
powered?
They are using atomic size. They're using atomic size power. Atomic atom powered. That's the quantum physics folks. They're just harnessing the energy between matter and light.
That's interesting. At least it's not radioactive the way you describe it. Wendy, we want to thank you for being on the program. This is fascinating information. It's the sort of stuff that makes you cringe and wonder and, good God, gets you talking to yourself. This is Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com, 866-229-3663. Thank you, Wendy. Talk to you again next Wednesday.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Take a break for some commercial announcements, and Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Are you concerned about prescription drug dependency to stay healthy? Are you worried that the cost and availability of your medications may put your health at risk? Perhaps it's time you consider a natural, safe, and effective way to deal with your health problems. If only you knew where to start. Start right here. Tune in to Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Oh, you know, Texas. You're in Texas. We didn't talk about it yesterday. And certainly there's areas of Texas that's experiencing some historic weather, historic flooding in the Houston area. And they have a levee that's, you know, they think it's going to break. They fear that the dam is going to break. And there's all kinds of watches and warnings. It's just epic there in Texas. Thousands have been displaced. You have, you know, I don't know what the number of dead is up to at this point. And I know you're not, it has not affected your area, but certainly.
No, we've had a lot of rain, but it hasn't. But right, you know, in my immediate area, no flooding. There's other places that aren't so far away that have been threatened with flooding that are maybe 30 miles away, something like that. You know, the low areas down along rivers, streams, you know, it's been possible, but mostly Houston, one other city in central Texas. Oklahoma's had a bout of flooding. And, you know, we talked a little about this a day or two ago, and one of the things about it is Texas has been in the midst of a drought for several years. I can tell you that however much trouble this flooding causes, and, you know, a lot of people will be hurt by the flooding, but a lot of other people are going to be helped by recharging reservoirs, growing the greening up on the grass and the trees and the crops and so on. And, you know, ill wind that blows no good. This is not to make light of whatever problems some people have had, but.
You know, through my years, it seems like whenever you have an area that is devastated by drought, it's always some sort of a major storm or, you know, some, you know, just the opposite to bring that drought to the end. I mean, here you have all this, you know, major flooding and lives lost, and in various parts. I remember when the Georgia area, you had a, you know, a lot of major storms come in there where, I mean, it just goes from one extreme to the next. Isn't it a gradual, it's not a gradual, you know, overcome of the problem of the drought. It's always a major, major, you know, night and day type of situation.
Well, the other thing is once the land is really dried out, it doesn't absorb the water at the moment it lands. You tend to get more runoff, and when you do finally start to get some rain on the land that has been just dried out completely, lots of runoff, water moves fast, more prone to flooding. And, of course, after a drought, you don't have the same ground cover. Grass, for example, that would normally slow the flow of water.
Mm-hmm.
You have less grass available, the water moves faster, you have more flooding problems. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things, but it's just the way the world works.
Let's just hope that the dam stays in together. And you know, but here's a short, brief, newsworthy to report. Oklahoma is the latest state to protect pastors and churches. Oklahoma legislators are protecting pastors in that state, even as homosexuals are asking them to perform marriage ceremonies. Governor Mary Fallon has signed into law a bill that protects pastors and churches if they refuse to perform or host same-sex marriage ceremonies. So, you know, the states can do a lot, not just in this situation, but in all situations. States can address a lot of our problems if they get the right people in there to do so.
I understand that. You know, and that's actually a good point, because when we think about politics, we think of the national level. Politics for 90% of the American people is all about who's the president, maybe the vice president. The remaining 10%, maybe 5% of those, actually think about the congressmen and the senators. But who really gets wrapped up in local politics? It's not where we focus our minds unless we're really out. I mean, the local hustlers that get into public office, yeah. But most people don't pay much attention to local politics. And it's a bad thing. It's the sort of thing where we might do a lot better if, instead of making plans on how we're going to save the whole country, and that's where people tend to think, we're going to get that SOB out of office and we're going to elect another SOB, and he will save the country. Maybe not. Maybe the way to think about this is, what can I do just to save the community I'm living in? Forget the national, maybe even the state. What can we do right here locally?
And another example of that is about Obama's plan to grant this legal status to people. Received a major blow yesterday when the appeals court upheld a hold on the executive action pending the outcome of lawsuits brought by 26 states.
Yeah.
So, again, here's another great example of how states can fight back.
Yeah.
And take the people in those states to...
Well, you know, it's the sort of thing where even Obama, for example, all of his thinking is at the national level, and that's easily understood. You get that, but just the same, he's got to be a little bit frustrated. Where'd these 26 states go? He thought there were 57 to begin with, and now, but then 27. It's almost half of the states that he imagined there were are giving him a hard time, and where do they come from, blah, blah, blah.
We also have Rick Santorum. He's entering the 2016 presidential race. And, of course, you know, he's a big advocate for conservative family values. So this is his second bid for president. So there's another Republican set to fail for the presidential race. But,
but you see where we've got two more altogether in addition to Hillary. I believe it's two more that have signed up so far. And I think Hillary's strategy was that she would get in early and she would establish such an intimidating lead that no one else would challenge her. All right, I think that was the way she was thinking. I don't know that to be true, but I think that's the way she was. And now, but we've got two more challengers. And it may be that she's not going to establish enough of a lead where that will be insurmountable and no one will dare to challenge her for the Democrat nomination. They are challenging her. That indicates that there are people who aren't convinced that she is inevitable. And I don't doubt that they're right. I don't think Hillary's going to make it.
I disagree. I don't think she went in thinking nobody would challenge her. I think people were sort of thinking that she had a run of the deal, so they didn't even bother. But seeing that, you know, she didn't, now they're beginning to grow some items and enter the race against her. But, you know, from day one, I never thought she didn't have the heart. She didn't have, she's got too much baggage.
Yeah, but there's, you know, no what she is? You know what she reminds me of?
Her power is going to come from whom she endorses. That's the
power. I hear.
That she holds.
I hear, but I don't think she's good. What power is she going to have after this? After
whoever 20? She. Well,
I think she's an historical footnote. I think she's like Herbert Horatio Humphrey, who some of you might remember. He ran for president a number of times back in the 60s.
She was a distraction. She was a distraction, and she had no intentions of winning the White House.
I don't know about that. I don't agree with that. That might be true, but it's not what I agree. I see a woman in Hillary who is almost obsessive. No, is obsessive. Not almost, is obsessive in her blind ambition. She wanted to be president. She doesn't care if she's fit to be president, if she's anything. None of it mattered. She wanted it. She wanted it. She wanted it. And she was going to bust whatever she had to break in order to get what she wanted. I get that impression. I see her just, I don't think she's competent. I don't think she's confident. The only thing that really
she isn't.
The only thing that establishes her at all, makes her real, is her incredible ambition. That's the way it appears to me. It's like, good God, don't get between that woman and whatever she wants. I get the impression she's just implacable in her own way, but not competent.
How many of them are competent?
Well,
not very many.
That's absolutely a good question. You know, we have, the nation is so big, so complex right now. Who really is competent to deal with what's going on? Nobody can read the laws. You know, Congress has admitted, we talked about it, I believe we had it at one of the subjects we intended to talk about, I don't know if we got to it or not, but Congress has admitted that they're not reading all of the laws or even most of the laws that they vote for or against. Right? The president certainly doesn't know what the law says. They bring him a law that's built the size of a phone book, and he's supposed to read that and understand what it means before he signs it. He can't read that. You know, like we said before, it's not like reading a romance novel or something. This is complex legalese. Nobody really knows what the laws say. And yet they're voting for them, the president signs them, they go out there, and then you and I get caught in the gears when somebody says, oh, you didn't obey the law. Ignorance is no excuse. They don't even know what the law is.
I think this time around, whoever gets elected or whatever issues they platform that they decide to choose to run on, I think this time it isn't. And I know we're a nation of laws, and the president is supposed to enforce those laws, but I think the problems that we're having and we're experiencing, I think it goes a little bit, they're going to need something more than just following the laws this point in time, if that makes any sense at all. Because I think this country is so screwed up.
Yeah.
And they have to, and these problems need to be addressed. And you know what, you mentioned the other day, you talked about the problems that we're having in these cities. This racial issue has to be addressed. And it isn't the racial issue that has to be addressed. It's the immigration issue that needs to be addressed. And none of these things can be fixed. And you're right, nobody discusses it. It's either this or that. And if you're against what the liberals want you to believe, well, then you're some sort of a nut. And that
and
has to be changed.
What the conservatives want you to believe, you're some sort of a traitor or something. I don't know what it is. Neither one of the parties, in my opinion, at the leadership level seem to give a damn about the American people.
No.
Both of them have agendas that are contrary to the best interests of the people, contrary to the terms of the Constitution. Why do we have so much complexity and confusion in relationship to our laws? Because, for one thing, we have abandoned the Constitution. It's not a big document. It's not that hard to understand. We have adopted the idea that it's a living document and that it's entitled and the judges can amend it by deciding this is what this means and this is what the other phrase means and so on. They can interpret it at any time to mean anything they want. That's a lie. That is a treasonous lie. If the Constitution was a living document, then why did the founders provide an opportunity to amend it? I think it's Article 7. I don't recall for sure, but I think it's Article 7 in the Constitution that discusses the amendment process. They said, here's how you change it. All right? They never intended that some judge sitting on the bench could sit back and say, well, I think it means this, and we're going to interpret it to mean this now. We're going to say black is white and white is black and red is gray or whatever because I'm a judge. No, you can't. The Constitution means exactly what it meant when it was adopted 26 years ago or whatever it was. I don't recall exactly. But it means the same thing except insofar as it has been amended by the people. Constitution is the people's law. Not the government's law. It's the original deal where the people sat down and said, okay, we're going to have a federal government, and here's the deal. You guys get to be present, congressmen, senators. You've got to play by these rules. We, the people, are in control. You are the servants. These are your rules, and you can't step outside this box. And the only way you change the box is get we, the people, to agree to amend the Constitution. All right. But if we don't amend it, this is the deal. Same deal now as it was 200 years ago. Well, we've lost sight of that. And as a result, we could have had a constitution and a system of laws that was fairly coherent and consistent. And it wouldn't necessarily be confusing, overly complex. And I don't mean the Constitution is the only thing we'd have. But if all of our laws were consistent with the Constitution, it would be a lot easier to deal with this system. But we have laws for everything. I mean, and nobody knows what they mean. Congress doesn't know. They just vote for them. Vote against them. They don't care. They don't read them. President doesn't read them. Who knows the law? Anyone? Anyone know what the law is? And some people say the argument is a little bit ridiculous, but I'll tell you something. If anyone knew the law, why do we have appellate courts? If the law was even knowable, every decision at the trial court level should be made, and that'd be the end of it. Law is absolute, so we know what it is. But instead, what happens is a lot of decisions at the trial court level are appealed, and many of them reach the Supreme Court. And sometimes the Supreme Court, they say 5-4, that here's what the law means. It does not mean what so-and-so says. It means what somebody else said. Even at the Supreme Court, how do we have 5 justices vote yes and 4 vote no? What's that mean? It means 4 of the justices in the minority, they don't know what the law means according to the majority. The Supreme Court doesn't even know what the law means on a regular basis. Right? 44% of them, 4 of them, routinely don't, they vote against it. They say, no, I think this is what it means. They can't even agree on what the law is. And yet they say this is a nation of laws. This is a nation of influence and hustle and con, and somebody needs to actually restore some of the laws, and a good place to start would be with a strict interpretation of the Constitution. We're going to take a break now for a couple of commercials, and Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with Salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief Formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Let's talk about money. I want to talk. I want to talk about gold, the economy. So you take it away. Sam.
If you want to talk about money, and everybody says, "Oh, let's talk about money." I mean, are we talking about currency?
Let's talk about current events. Let's talk about why Americans have no retirement savings. And we know many times that people are financially strapped. We talk about this on, you know, probably a monthly, maybe weekly basis, and how many Americans just are not financially prepared for retirement. And when you look at these numbers, and the whole idea is, folks, you need to, you know, to get off. And, you know, when we talk about people, I mean, these people are going to be retiring. It's going to have to come from somewhere.
Well,
they're
yeah.
Depending.
Okay. Is it coming from you? Is it coming from me? Where is it coming from? The problem we've got is that this world has trusted the government to take care of our retirement through Social Security. We've got an article here from Reuters.
And retirement plans.
Yeah, we've got an article here from Reuters that says many Americans have no retirement savings. This is a Federal Reserve survey. You know, we have the idea behind Social Security was old age insurance. You'd have enough money to get by when you got old. All right? Now we can wonder, will we get enough to get from Social Security to get by? And the answer is, if you collect it, yes. All right? If you collect it, you'll get $1,000, $1,400, $1,500 a month. It's not big money, but it's enough to survive on, assuming you're not deeply in debt and paying off your mortgage or paying off your car payment or whatever. Can you survive on it? Yes, you can. All right. But one of the problems, I remember this clearly. It sticks in my mind. This goes back to about 1958 or 59. My stepfather explaining to me about Social Security. And at that point, he wasn't a brilliant guy. He wasn't a dummy, but he wasn't a brilliant guy. He was a businessman, whatever. But he was explaining that if you took the money that you were required to invest in Social Security back then, which was a triviality compared to today, if you took that money and you invested it from the time you were 18 until you were 65, when you retired, you would have something like $1 million in the bank. Now, the reason that's important is because the government has taken an enormous amount of money from the American people. And what you're going to get is subsistence-level retirement through Social Security. If the government had properly invested that money rather than just grabbing it like a tax and spending it on whatever they could imagine, if they'd invested it on your behalf, right, you could have hundreds of thousands of dollars and maybe more than $1 million in the bank waiting for you when you turn 65. And this article from Reuters, which again is entitled "Many Americans Have No Retirement Savings," there wouldn't be any. It wouldn't be an article. We wouldn't be reading from it. You have been betrayed over the 40-some years that you've been working, 50 years you've been working and contributing to Social Security, and what do you get for it? You know, you have paid in real wages, real wealth that you've earned over time, and it's been, and the value of that has been diminished by inflation, and when the government pays you back, it'll be peanuts compared to what you paid in. So all my point is, we're getting, there's going to be a terrible retirement problem before most of us are going to live to see it. All right? We're going to see a moment when people, elderly, they don't have enough money to get by. Lots of them. And what are we going to do about it? Take them in? You know, let them live in our homes, feed them, clothe them, shelter them? It would be the Christian thing to do. It would be the charitable thing to do. But how many people can we really afford to take care of when they can no longer take care of themselves and we can barely take care of ourselves? You know, problems are headed our way. It says almost a third of working adults are without savings or a pension plan. 38% of more than 5,800 respondents have no intention to retire or plan to keep working as long as possible, meaning they don't even believe there's going to be a retirement. 38% are saying, I'll never retire. I'm going to be working until they nail a lid shut on the box. 31% of non-retirees have no retirement savings or pension, including nearly a quarter of those older than 45. No, nothing. A quarter of those over 45. You got 20 years to get it together, folks. Over 45, got nothing. A quarter of those, not all of them, not a majority, but a quarter have nothing. Even among individuals who are saving, fewer than half adults with self-directed retirement savings are mostly or very confident of their ability to make the right investment decisions when managing their retirement savings. A lot of people are saving money, but they don't know what to do with it, and they're not confident about what to do with it. And part of the reason for that lack of confidence is we have a government that's running the economy like a pinball machine. Right? They're just, well, let's try this. Let's try this. Let's try something else. We talked about it a little bit yesterday. They have untested. The Federal Reserve has a new untested program that they want to try. In the past, they have been stimulating. They have been trying to stimulate the economy by getting consumers to buy more. That was one of their objectives. That was one of their express objectives. But recently, in just an article that I had, I don't have it here right in front of me, but the Fed has decided it's going to try a new formula. They're going to pay the banks to deposit money into the Federal Reserve so that the banks don't have to lend to the people. Which means if the people can't get credit, they're not going to spend as much. Which means the Fed, which has relied for years on boosting consumer spending in order to stimulate the economy, has now said, forget that, we're going to diminish consumer spending. In an untested program, and the untested, why untested? Because the existing programs don't work. The Fed has been trying to get this economy going since 2008. And they haven't had much success, all right? They have prevented it from sliding into a complete collapse and depression. They've done that. That's good. But in terms of moving it above just a stagnating level, they haven't had much success. Their conventional tools don't work anymore. So now they're looking at new tools. How are you and I supposed to know how to invest and where to invest and what we can expect for an interest rate, a return on investment? How can we know that if the government and the Federal Reserve is trying untested strategies? We don't even know what's going to happen. You know, there has to be some sort of stability. There has to be something that we can rely on. We can look out the window and say, I see what's happening. I know how to invest my money now, and it'll be valuable, and I will have made a reasonable return on my investment over the course of the next 10 years or 20 years or more. We can't point to any investments right now with the possible exception of gold and silver. Or we can sit back and say, ha-ha, 10 years from now, that'll be worth more.
Well,
that
actually
would hold its value and maybe even increase in value. How many other investments can you point to where you can say that with any level of confidence? The whole thing has become a crapshoot, and the average, and it's wrong because the average person doesn't want to shoot craps with their retirement.
And, Al, that's why the government is going to come in and say, we're here to help you.
Uh-huh.
We have this new annuity that you give us your retirement. We'll come in. We'll just take it. You're not even going to give it to us. Mm-hmm. We're just going to take it. We'll give you a monthly payment. Maybe there won't be any more Social Security, but we'll take, and you'll never, ever have to worry again about running out of money as you age.
But if
have the Obamacare health care for you. What?
If you die, whatever is left in your annuity will go to the government.
That is correct.
Right? Just go to your heirs. If you'd saved $1 million over the course of your life, and the government says, we're going to take that $1 million and give you an annuity, and you're guaranteed to get paid. Well, that's fine. But if you live in the course of your life, if you exhaust, say, $500,000 out of the $1 million you've saved, and you'd pass on, do your heirs, your children, your grandchildren get the remaining $500,000? Uncle Sam will take it. All right? You'll have nothing to leave your children. You know, it's just another one of these things where the government is a bunch of racketeers. They say they're here to help you. They're not here to help anybody but themselves, the New World Order, the bureaucrats, the technocrats, the neo-Nazis, the communists, the socialists. They're all the collectivists. And they don't give a damn about the American people.
Absolutely not. So, folks, again, I mean, it's coming. We don't know when. Someone call me. I had a lot of calls lately about people asking me if I think that the dollar is going to be revalued in September. Now, there's a lot of things happening in September. There's all kinds of dates being thrown around, and we certainly spoke with Rob West on this program, and, you know, he talks a lot about what China's going to be doing going into the basket of currencies using the SDRs and so forth, and these are all possibilities come September. Does that mean the dollar is going to be revalued? I'm not sure. I believe whatever happens, it's going to happen so quick. You won't have time to go out and say, gee, maybe I ought to sell this and that, and maybe I ought to reposition myself because, you know, it seems like it is happening now. It is going to happen so quick. You will wake up to a brand new world, and there will be some sort of an announcement saying, well, you know what? Overnight, this happened, and in order to prevent this from happening, we had to put a hold on everything, and we're going to revalue our current blah, blah. That's how it will happen. It will happen overnight. You will wake up to a brand new world.
And in that new world, one of the things you're going to notice, when they talk about a currency revaluation, what are they talking about? Are they going to make the dollar more valuable or less? And the answer is they'll make it less valuable. They're going to inflate it dramatically. It will be perhaps a one-day overnight episode of hyperinflation where you are, you went to sleep at night and you had $100,000 in the bank, and when you woke up the next day, it turns out you only had $10,000 in terms of purchasing power. I don't know what number they're going to put on it, but they will diminish your savings because that's how they wipe out the existing debt. Right? The government's the biggest debtor in the world. They want the debt wiped out. Inflation or hyperinflation is one of the ways to get rid of the debt. And you can expect one day, you know, government's going to do what's best for the government. Just say, boy, this was necessary. This was an emergency. You know, we hated to do it.
The sad thing is, most of the people out there, even though they'll lose 50% or more of their funds, will probably say, well, maybe it had to be done for whatever the situation that was created in order to do what they need to do in order to inflate. And so, you know, and then you'll have a mass of people trying to get in to secure their what little they have left over. And the thing of it is, it's all going to be gone. And I know people are saying, oh, well, we've heard that story before. Yeah, you have. And it hasn't changed anything. It will happen. It has to happen because the thing has just gotten way too big. It cannot continue in the same manner in which we have.
Yep.
And as long as we're on a fiat currency, these are all symptoms of that decision to take us off the gold standard.
Take us off the gold standard and ultimately make subjects and serfs and slaves out of us. You know, you can't give up your gold and your silver. We did as a nation. We allowed that to happen. But when we did, we gave the government the power to spin apparent wealth out of nothingness. And that gave them an incredible power. Imagine that I could sit here and write checks that were never going to be cashed. I could go buy a new car. I could buy a new house. I could buy a dozen new houses. I could buy an airplane. I can buy the state of Texas if nobody will ever cash my checks. We essentially gave government the power to write checks that nobody is ever going to cash when we said, we'll take your worthless paper promises rather than gold and silver. Government can't spin gold and silver out of thin air. And that being the case, government can't grow uncontrollably. Government can't become despotic, tyrannical, fascist. Can't do it without a fiat currency. They need that paper. We were fool enough to let them run that paper money system on us, and we are going to pay a price for that before this is done. And nobody is going to be pleased.
It's sort of like the same example as Bernie Madoff. How many of those people were getting those big checks? I mean, how do you get those type of returns for year after year after year? I'll guarantee you 90% of the people knew that there was probably something wrong with what Bernie Madoff was doing. But what did they do about it? Nothing. And look what happened.
As long as the money is coming in,
they were just fine. They knew something was wrong. But they didn't do anything about it. They didn't protect themselves. They didn't offset what they had. And look what happened to them.
They were conned.
And that's what the government is doing to you.
That's right. They're doing it right now. We have just different groups of con artists, that's all. But one of the things about it, there is an old saying, and I believe it to be true. You can't con an honest man. All right? The whole idea of a con is I'm going to give you something for nothing. I'm going to provide you with a free lunch, and people will line up for it all day long. But they'll line up because they want something they didn't have to pay for themselves, and that makes them dishonest. We as a nation have become dishonest. We want what we haven't earned, and we think we're entitled. It's only smart. It's just playing the game. Well, you can't con an honest man. You can't con an honest nation. It is a condemnation of all of us if the government is able to con us. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Addisk. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back mañana. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye.
Seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too fast.
In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball.
Money, money, money. Must be funny.